I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, pushing for peace. President Donald Trump speaks with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky in an effort to end the war with Russia. We're at the White House, making a splash. Do astronauts return to Earth after an extended stay at the International Space Station? Not an average Joe. Learn all about the solemnity of St. Joseph with EWTN's Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Plus, they can carry a tune across the globe. The sights and sounds of a beautiful concert in Rome from a choir based right here in the nation's capital. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the solemnity of St. Joseph. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump resumes negotiations with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Trump says their hour-long phone call was very good. It comes just one day after Trump spoke with Russian President Vladimir Putin, who agreed not to target Ukraine's energy infrastructure. But tonight, while there has been progress, ending the war is still uncertain. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, Secretary of State Marco Rubio and National Security Advisor Mike Waltz describing today's call in a written statement they released after the call, obviously, describing, quote, a fantastic phone conversation, going on to say both leaders agreed to continue working together to end the war in Ukraine.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt addresses reporters about today's call between President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
The two leaders also agreed on a partial ceasefire against energy. Technical teams will meet in Saudi Arabia in the coming days to discuss broadening the ceasefire to the Black Sea on the way to a full ceasefire. They agreed this could be the first step toward the full end of the war and ensuring security.
White House National Security Advisor Michael Waltz says he's in talks with his counterparts from Russia and Ukraine.
Shuttle diplomacy is difficult, it's tough, but we are going back and forth at every level, driving both sides towards a ceasefire and driving both sides towards an end of this war.
President Zelensky also provided an update this morning.
As for the territories, this will probably be one of the most sensitive and difficult issues in the upcoming negotiations. The first step is still an unconditional ceasefire, even if there are some paths that still need to be taken to get there. For us, the red line is the recognition of the Ukrainian temporarily occupied territories as Russian. We will not go for it.
Meanwhile, Russia struck a medical facility in northeastern Ukraine late Tuesday, according to local officials. Firefighters evacuated at least 147 patients. As for not targeting energy infrastructure, Ukraine accusing Russia of breaking that already, while Russia accused Kyiv of attacking equipment near one of its pipelines.
And of course, the Russians have been pounding the Ukrainian energy infrastructure, the generation capacity, the transformers, all of the things that give Ukrainians the ability to heat in the winter.
Former State Department spokesperson Ned Price says Putin uses fragile ceasefires to continue to gain ground.
What I fear President Putin is trying to do is trying to create another frozen conflict. And frozen conflicts are contexts in which he has always thrived.
And in that phone conversation today, the two leaders also discussed Ukraine's electrical supply, power plants, POWs, air defense, the battlefield situation, missing children, and much more. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the White House has stepped up its attacks on a federal judge who blocked the deportation of illegal Venezuela immigrants that the administration says are gang members. It comes after Chief Justice John Roberts issued a rare statement rebuking the president.
The president has made it clear that he believes this judge in this case should be impeached. And he has also made it clear that he has great respect for the Chief Justice John Roberts. And it's incumbent upon the Supreme Court to rein in these activist judges. These partisan activists are undermining the judicial branch by doing so. We have co-equal branches of government for a reason, and the president feels very strongly about that.
On today, federal judge James Boasberg extended his deadline for the Justice Department to provide details under seal by midday. He is investigating whether officials violated his Saturday order to turn around airborne planes. And for more, we're joined now by Thomas Berry. He is the director of the Cato Institute's Robert A. Levy Center for Constitutional Studies and editor-in-chief of the Cato Supreme Court Review. Thomas, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. In a court filing today, Justice Department lawyers said that Washington-based U.S. District Judge James Boasberg was improperly intruding on presidential discretion to handle sensitive diplomatic and national security matters. Boasberg has issued an order temporarily banning the administration from removing illegal immigrants from the United States under the 18th Century Alien Enemies Act that Trump invoked in proceeding with the deportations. Do you think that Boasberg overstepped his authority?
I don't see any evidence of that yet. You can certainly dispute the merits of his ruling, and that's what appeals are for. That's what the D.C. Circuit is for vigorous debate and for briefs will be filed on both sides. But this is what judges do. They evaluate whether an executive action was in compliance with federal statutes and the Constitution. And if it wasn't, they tell the executive branch they have to stop. So this was well within the mainstream of what judges do all the time. We've had many nationwide injunctions blocking actions by President Trump, President Biden, and President Obama.
Yeah, and President Trump has called for Judge Boasberg to be impeached. So what is the next step here?
Well, I think Chief Justice Roberts was exactly right in his statement that impeachment is not an appropriate response to an opinion by a judge that you disagree with. That's what appeals are for. That's not what impeachment is for. That's only for misconduct, really things like, a lack of proper ethics by a judge, not a disagreement with a ruling. So the next step is simply appeal to the D.C. Circuit and potentially appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court on an emergency basis, and they can act within a matter of days or even hours.
Almost out of time here, but I want to ask you this. A federal judge ruled Tuesday that Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency, also known as DOGE, likely exercised unconstitutional authority in multiple ways in dismantling USAID. This marks the first time a judge has ruled that Musk is likely exercising enough independent authority to require him to be confirmed by the Senate under the Constitution's appointments clause, that is. Thomas, I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
I think this claim may well have merit. It's a very serious challenge, and the administration has a lot of explaining to do because, as the judge said, there's no evidence that anyone except Musk was the one who made the final order to kick USAID out of its building and shut down its website. And if you make a final decision that affects U.S. policy, you need to be confirmed by the Senate. So this will be appealed as well. There might be more evidence in the background that someone else ratified all these decisions of Musk. But as of yet, we haven't seen that, at least for every single decision at issue.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Thomas, thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, now to the Middle East, where Israel says that it has launched a limited ground operation in Gaza. The Israeli defense minister warns that attacks on Gaza will increase, quote, with an intensity that you have not known until Hamas frees the remaining hostages and gives up control of the territory. Meanwhile, an international United Nations staffer was killed and five others wounded in a strike on the Gaza Strip. Officials say the origin of the explosion is not known.
It was clearly an explosion. We do not know whether it was fired from land, from the sea, from the air. That part is unclear. It is clear that it was an explosive ordnance that was either dropped or fired at the infrastructure and detonated inside the building.
Our Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer is facing the toughest fight of his leadership career. He is meeting sharp criticism from his party's base over his recent vote to advance a House Republican-drafted funding bill that passed the Senate. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales reports with more. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Most Senate Democratic colleagues say that their 74-year-old leader, Chuck Schumer, isn't going anywhere. But then there are some senators and several House members that are now publicly questioning his decision-making and the direction of their party. The majority leader continues to defend his vote on the recent funding bill, saying a government shutdown would have given President Trump and DOGE all the power.
I'm a leader. Sometimes you got to see the danger that might be a little bit down the road, weeks or months, and stand up for what's right. I knew I'd get flack.
Flack is an understatement. Some want him replaced as soon as possible.
I respect Chuck Schumer. I think he's had a great, long-standing career. He's done a lot of great things. But I'm afraid that it may be time for the Senate Democrats to pick new leadership as we move forward.
He's absolutely wrong. I mean, look at the reality of the votes, right? I understand that the American people are frustrated. Please believe, many of us did not sleep because we were calling and trying to impress upon the senators the importance of pushing back in this moment.
Some Democrats already have his replacement picked and are encouraging Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to run for Schumer's Senate seat next year.
It is almost unthinkable why Senate Democrats would vote to hand the few pieces of leverage that we have away for free when we've been sent here to protect Social Security, protect Medicaid, and protect Medicare.
Even his longtime ally, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, says Schumer made the wrong call.
I myself don't give away anything for nothing. And I think that's what happened the other day. We could have, in my view, perhaps gotten them to agree to a third way, which was a bipartisan CR for four weeks.
Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut says he still supports Schumer as leader, but warned the party needs to show more urgency.
Senator Schumer certainly can lead this caucus.
Is he the best person?
He can lead this caucus, but we need to have a conversation inside the caucus about whether we are willing to stand up to Republicans.
Schumer still has the support of the House Minority Leader.
We had a good conversation about the path forward, particularly as it relates to making sure we all speak with one voice in the effort to stop these Medicaid cuts from ever being enacted into law.
Bottom line, the drum continues to beat loudly. The backlash was so intense that Schumer postponed a publicity tour that was scheduled for this week to promote his new book due to what his team called security concerns. A name that's being tossed around to replace Schumer is Senator Dick Durbin, but he's 80 years old and will likely retire soon. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the Federal Reserve is keeping interest rates steady. Analysts say Wednesday's decision shows central bankers are waiting to see how the Trump administration's policy changes will play a factor on the U.S. economy. Many economists have predicted that there will be at least one rate cut before the end of the year. In January, the Fed said that it expects to have two rate cuts in 2025. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including down to Earth. Two astronauts are back home after 9 months in space. What one of them is saying about his faith. Plus, new developments in the health of the Holy Father. Welcome back. A church leader in Haiti makes an urgent plea to the international community for help, saying that amid unrest in the Caribbean nation, blood flows every day. In an interview, Archbishop Max Leroy Mesidor says in part, quote, "Do not forget Haiti. Please do not delay because we are on the brink of disaster." The head of the Archdiocese of Port-au-Prince also says that the United Nations police support has been a great disappointment, adding that the church continues to bring hope and courage to an exhausted and overwhelmed nation. Pope Francis remains in a Rome hospital as he recovers from double pneumonia and is showing signs of improvement. Today, the Holy See press office confirmed that his condition is improving and doctors have suspended the use of non-invasive mechanical ventilation while also reducing the need for high-flow oxygen therapy. This morning, the Holy Father concelebrated Mass for the Solemnity of St. Joseph. Despite his illness, the Vatican released a message from Pope Francis for the 62nd World Day of Prayer for Vocations. Well, he links vocations with the Jubilee Year of Hope, saying in part, quote, "Every vocation is inspired by hope, marked by confident trust in God's providence." After more than 9 months in space, two astronauts have finally returned to Earth.
And splashdown, Crew 9 back on Earth.
Astronauts Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams splashed down off the coast of Florida in a SpaceX capsule. The two were originally meant to spend a week or so at the International Space Station. Issues with their Boeing Starliner prompted a longer stay. The astronauts are being monitored by flight surgeons as they adjust to gravity before returning home. Butch Wilmore credited his faith for getting him through this extended stay.
My feeling on all of this goes back to my faith. It's bound in my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. He is working out his plan and his purposes for his glory throughout all of humanity, and how that plays into our lives is significant and important. And however that plays out, and I am content because I understand that. I understand that he's at work.
That's beautiful. And for more, we turn now to Michael Pravica, professor of physics and astronomy at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Michael, great to be with you today. So as we mentioned, the two astronauts are being monitored by flight surgeons as they return to gravity. Let's talk a little bit more about that, what they might be looking for and the impact that space could have on their bodies.
Well, thank you for having me on. We have to understand that outer space is extreme conditions. You're basically dealing with a weightless environment. You're also dealing with extremes of temperature and solar radiation, and also the stress, because if you make certain types of mistakes, you may not make it through those mistakes. So, and then, of course, you know, we were, you know, evolved or created, however you want to look at it, as basically in a very unique situation of gravity. And so you don't have gravity, so of course you're going to have issues with muscles, use it or lose it. And so they're going to have to retrain basically for reliving on Earth.
So tell us a little bit more about that as well. I mean, what will they have to go through, that is, physical therapy, other methods to get them, I guess, ready back to return to life as normal?
Yeah, I mean, so there's going to be a lot of physical therapy, basically learning, you know, standing, walking, running, you know, bicycling, all sorts of activities that will help retrain their muscles and build muscle mass so that they're able to withstand, for example, just standing against gravity. And so all of this will take some time to get back to where they were before they left.
Yeah. You know, as we mentioned, they were initially only supposed to be at the International Space Station for around a week, and then somehow it turned into 9 months, as we mentioned. Is that something that we have seen before? I mean, was this delay unusual?
I think it was unusual because right now we have a very strange period of space exploration where there are efforts to commercialize it. And, you know, basically, when you look at something as complicated as going out into outer space where we were not meant to be, basically, there's so many issues that sort of transcend corporations and even in some sense transcend nations, and really should be a global human effort. And that's exactly what happens in the ISS, the International Space Station. The problem is that when you're, you know, bringing these for-profit entities into the mix, and then, you know, issues with who's doing what the management and who's leading the effort, you are going to have these kinds of problems arise.
Yeah, Michael, quickly, let me ask you this. We talked about possible, you know, impact on their physical bodies, but what about their mental health? Mm-hmm. Is that something else that they'll be looking into as well?
Absolutely. I personally, you know, I have a family, and I would be devastated if I was supposed to go for about 8 days for a trip, and then it ended up becoming 9 months. And then again, as I said, there are so many systems on board to keep sustain life in this IS, International Space Station. Every person that's on board has to participate. They will have responsibilities, tasks, and so then the stress of having to follow through on those tasks. And of course, knowing how we call it Murphy's Law, if something can go wrong, it will. All of these machines and these, you know, complex instruments and techniques are susceptible to, you know, errors. They're susceptible to just equipment malfunction. And so being able to fix those on the fly introduces a tremendous amount of stress. And so I'm sure they're going to need a really good long vacation.
No doubt. We're going to be praying for them during this period. Michael, thank you so much. We appreciate your insights.
Thank you very much. Anytime.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Solemnity of St. Joseph. Learn more about today's saint and how he has been honored throughout the ages. Plus, this pilgrimage to Rome features several high notes we'll explain. Today, marks the solemnity of St. Joseph, patron saint of the Universal Church. Across the globe, the Catholic faithful are celebrating the spouse of Mary, who has been long venerated by the Universal Church. And joining us now is Vice President of EWTN News, as well as church historian, Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, great to be with you today.
Great to be with you, especially on a wonderful solemnity like this one.
Yeah, it's so wonderful to have you with us. So tell us, why March 19th?
Yeah, customarily we associate the feast days of a saint, in this case St. Joseph, with the day that they died. And in fact, there is that connection here. Historically, we're not exactly sure what day St. Joseph died on. But there is a tradition in the Eastern Church that connects him to Christmas or right around there. But there's also a tradition in Bethlehem that was picked up, especially in the Latin Rite in Western Europe, of March 19th. What's interesting is that Pope Pius, Blessed Pius IX, in his 1870 decree, sort of codifying St. Joseph as the patron of the Church, specifically lists March 19th. But then he also promulgated that decree on December 8th. It was a tough year in 1870, the loss of the Papal States. So Pope Pius was making a point of connecting the beautiful story of Joseph with Mary. He was the custodian. He was her earthly husband. He was the defender of that holy family. And so there is this great tie to December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, in the same way that Joseph is always tied to salvation history.
Yeah, and as we know, since the late 19th century, you know, we've really seen a growing appreciation for St. Joseph. In 1889, as you well know, Pope Leo XIII wrote a prayer to St. Joseph's to be said after the Rosary, and in 1955, Pope Pius XII instituted the feast day of St. Joseph of the Worker on May 1st, in part to fight back against secularism and the communist holiday of May 1st. And as recently as 2021, Pope Francis declared a year of St. Joseph. So I guess it begs the question, why is St. Joseph so special?
Well, we can add to that some of the great writings of Pius XI in 1937, who included St. Joseph as one of the great defenders against communism. We have the encyclicals of Pope St. John Paul II, Redem Tortis Custos. So there has been, throughout the whole of modern papal history, this beautiful reflection on St. Joseph. You can ask why. I think it's twofold. First, we see his role as custodian, as defender of the Holy Family, which was also sort of not, in, even more than an analogy, represented the Church. And so him as patron of the Church makes perfect sense. But he's also somebody who, as Pope Benedict XVI and Pope Francis have noted, had humility and hiddenness in his life, this quiet beauty about him, this stalwartness, but most of all, his fidelity and obedience to what God was asking him to do. And so we turn to St. Joseph in all of those special roles.
Yeah, and before I let you go, we're almost out of time, but what else should we know about St. Joseph?
Yeah, well, St. Joseph, of course, is the patron of a good death. He is also known as a terror of demons, in part because of that steadfastness, that remarkable dignity that he possessed, but also his powerful intercessory prayer. St. Teresa of Avila always turned to him. Pope Francis turns to him. He has a statue of St. Joseph on his desk, sleeping. And he says that when he has a problem that he needs to think about, he'll write out the problem and he'll put it under the statue of St. Joseph sleeping. And he knows that St. Joseph will be there as an intercessor, as he is for all of us.
Thank you so much, Matthew.
Great to be with you.
Great to be with you as well. God bless. Our Father tonight, the choir for the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception is in Rome for the 2025 Jubilee. The concerts in Rome offer a special opportunity to share the beauty of sacred music with the faithful. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigren has more.
From one Marian shrine to another. This week, the choir of the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. is singing at St. Mary Major in Rome. It's part of their pilgrimage to Rome for the 2025 Jubilee, with another concert scheduled for tomorrow at the Basilica of St. Peter in Chains.
What we're really dedicated to doing is providing beautiful music in the context of the liturgy at the National Shrine. But of course, we like to sort of share that art, that music, that form of evangelization, basically, by doing concerts. And what better place to do it in Rome during a Jubilee year?
The repertoire primarily features Renaissance music from the 16th and 17th centuries, along with contemporary American pieces from the 20th century. For their first concert at the Marian Shrine of St. Mary Major, the theme was To Jesus Through Mary. Their aim is first and foremost to bring people closer to God.
Music has such a transcendent ability to transcend time and place and just really move people in such a way that sometimes words alone don't. It speaks in a different way. And I think that it's a wonderful way to experience the church and God and your faith.
Music and its beauty can also be a powerful tool of evangelization.
No time.
Pope St. John Paul II emphasized this in his 1999 letter to artists, where he stressed the transformative and redemptive nature of beauty, including that of music in the world. For many listeners, and even choir members, music can play a pivotal role in conversion and in coming to know the Church.
I do have so many friends who have come into the church through like academia or the early church fathers or like Thomism, you know, they know about Aquinas. But for me, and I think for other people, the thing that really evangelized me was the beauty of both the music and the liturgy. And I think that can be such a tool. And I think, you know, there are people that are from the choir who have come into the church because they're so touched by that beauty.
Sacred music points to the divine, the choir member stressed, but through its beauty, it also aims to bring joy.
We hope people come away from the concert feeling spiritually refreshed, spiritually renewed, feeling a deeper connection both to the text and to the music that we're going to be performing. But more than anything else, I hope they feel joy. That's really what we want to bring.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.